is a, I'm not a love poem, and it's kind of recent, it's very short. It's called Away to Wicklow. It was so hard to leave you this morning, naked and warm in our borrowed bed. Hungover and sweaty from the night before, I jumped in the shower to wash off your smell, and left you, drove north, all the way to Wicklow, wondering what the hell I was doing up here when you were still down there, asleep in the sun.
Next up, we have Ross O'Donovan.
I brought a prop with me this time, so what I'm going to do is do a fast trilingual, which means I'm going to try three different languages, and I won't give the translation for the first two, because I'll let you just translate it to what you want. Yeah. Start off with an Irish piece called From Louis de Port to Washington. And Corona called, this is small data, this Alchemic Clona treat, Faraga Faris Fusha, this Najok Shakto and Ye, the Shule Tar Broad, the Shroid, and Shroid Rare, Nosh Gulan Lum Marboshot, Kora Vrin Erna Rutini Clay, this Lova Aragid Era Roshdi Gyongi, Mar Myok Shka. Fiaton, Segui, Gui, Dumpig McCree, Ishtak, Isamiak, Fui Kate Cooper, Nof Krukva Vara Movier, Nor Dyrick on Green, Har Miaul, Gulana, Anir, Vikuruk, Kinish, Ervana, Tush, Chokrasa, Ekbrisha, Trelokta, Nakahok. Next one then is by Louis Frere. It's a French piece called Pav Root Beef. Coussant mes amis divinus, que j'avais dit si près tenu, étant animé, ils ont été trop clairs, mais je crois le vent, les aots, la mort et se monte. Ils se sentent amis qui vont importe, il y a enfin venu divant m'emporte. Les importa avec le temps, qui courbe des fils, quand il n'y restait en branche fil, qui nal à terre, avec pauvreté qui m'entendra. Oui, de partout me fait la guerre, au temps en hiver. Ne courant pas que vous raconte, comment je me suis mis à enfant et en quelle manière. Qui sont mes amis devenus, qui j'avais dissipé tenu, et tant amés, ils ont été trop, la raison, j'y crois la vente, les à haute, la mort et se monte. And the last piece is just about the weather and how weather and conditions affect people. It's called Musings to Keep My Spirits Up. With this wonderful wet weather, I've decided to take an umbrella to shield me from its misery, from this misery. This is no average umbrella. It is so transparent you can see through it. So with stating the obvious as I do best, due to the amount of weasels putting words in my own mouth. Example, if you cannot express yourself, we have plenty of others who can express for you. Or even take those expressions and call them their own. Or will I give you an explanation of the custom job necessary that was required for that ridiculous umbrella? Before I took one step outside the door, I was even sagging my flatmates for bringing this umbrella out with them, telling them that it's one of these umbrellas, like how you spot a tourist straight out in the streets. So it's like what with graphics and logos very clearly saying, I love Ireland, or more precisely, I love heart image Ireland, on the four compass points. Warning, warning, here comes some product placement. I get out my Sharpie and begin my masterpiece. I could have shortened the whole sentence by using the word permanent marker, but instead of having the luxury of thinking before I write, which involves a lot of free time, as we all as we all know now, even time is not free. So we proceed to put a big black X on the first heart, next to cross out the word Ireland and put the word myself. Thirdly, I draw a fractured line through the heart image, and then put an am and an in. And finally, I just left one original, just to show that there still might be a little bit of hope of my concept of this country. Armed with my new and improved weather deflector, I'm yet again fit enough to take on the constant bullshit of this limited tongue.
Next up, we have Matthew Sweeney.
Two poems. Sleeping. She's sleeping, and it's not late. She was tired, very tired. Those fajitas, preceded by tequila, were far too much. That film about dwarves sent her to another place. The bedclothes called her in. The moon has a cloud rough. We needed the rats scurry round the overflown bin. The phone rings and I let it. She did the dishes, then read her china book half asleep. Oh, the poor houseplants. I'd better water them than try to photograph the moon. Second one, I come from Donegal, and when I was up there last year, they had erected this new inscription on a stone dealing with a local legend. The Piper's Cave. Young girls will be old women when I return, when I return. Young lambs will be old sheep when I come back again. So sang the red-haired piper as he vanished into the cave, playing a frolicsome jig followed by a bouncy polka. And he told his three friends they'd track him by his music, seeping up through the black earth and the green grass. They danced and they sang, they careered about, thinking him the bravest piper that had ever lived, here in the good parish of Clonmany, or elsewhere. And when a reel turned them left towards the sea, they pranced that way gladly, and a gull flew low overhead, joining in their singing, and a crow almost called in tune. Until the music morphed into a slow air, so sad the three began weeping, then all went silent. They were 2 miles from where they'd started, just in the townland of Anna. They shouted the piper's name, no answer. They appealed to the fairies, as much response as from the trees. They trooped back to the putchin, raising glasses to their brave friend, writing together a song for him. Young lambs were old women when he returned, returned. Young girls were old sheep when he came back again.
A treat, Matthew. I know the ink's still drying on those two pages, so we were the first to hear those. Mm-hmm. Next up we have Taj. Sorry, I don't know your surname, Taj. Taj
Milan.
Taj Milan.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah.
Hi. 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 Hi.
One is called Anniversary, and inspired by a dream, but it's dedicated to a niece of mine that died. So, last night I saw you in my dream, and you were the right age, it would seem. 31 years old had you lived, destined to stay forever young, at least in the minds of some. I'm glad you're aging in mind. It means to me you still live in some other place we cannot go. Not stopped heart, stopped short at 24. No trace of silly vanities. The smile and hug you gave me felt real. It felt as though you could really feel the ordinariness of life and death and love and all. Blemished with a beauty spot, your lips look slightly cracked from smiling. Your hair is as you would not have worn it. Your goth look so outworn for you now. Contentment communicated in one brief moment pervaded. Sweet angel, this anniversary night you allowed my heart to rest, to know you are happy and live, though somewhere else we cannot be, Rosine. This one is called Da. My father was a teacher. I am a teacher's son. He taught Latin and history his whole life long. Up to his expectations, I never could live. The love we both wanted, we could not each other give. At ease amongst his tears, he could convert. Awkward silence and uncomfortable reaching, the only place we ever really went, terse. Our hearts passing each other en route, immeasurable distance, our destination, perhaps our destiny in truth. We seem closer now somehow, and he without breath. I hear his love on the breeze. I breathe it in like a tonic, it sustains me. On dark days, I ask his help. My father was my father, I am my father's son. What he teaches me will stay with me all my life long. Thank you.
Next up, could we have Magdalena? There's a tiger for me on the end, is it?
Tiger.
Is it still tiger?
Tiger.
Tiger.
Yeah, it is,
tiger.
Yeah.
Let's ask the man himself to own his name.
I call myself
Tad. The man's name is Tad. Thank you very much. Okay? Now, can we please welcome Magdalena?
Woohoo!
Is that
your name though?
What?
Is that yeah, it's like Mary Magdalene from the Bible. This poem it's a wrong tense, have been shortlisted in a Gregory O'Donoghue Prize, so you can see it on my name on the Master of Literature center page. Though the poem is not there, it's just the title of it. Two things. There are mainly two things which are left after every man. Socks or t-shirts. First one, borrowed in the morning. Second one, borrowed at night. When the decision bites the leg of the heart like a mad dog, then they stay in your wardrobes to heat the memory.
That's the first one. One second, because there's just too many of them.
You can smell the poet from a distance. Far away he smells with his disgusting sensitivity, ordering him to preserve. Sometimes you don't know why. Who will read it later? Reading decreases anyway. Haven't you heard it on TV? And he looks at you with an accusation and smiles kindly. You think, there is something wrong with me. I think I've lost something on my way. Well, then if he can't talk, I can do it either. the poet looks at you. Well, but how do you know it? Who reads the poetry today? The poet smiles. Still, believe.
Neglected ambition, hovering smog. Street lamps wink as stiletto silhouettes lingering on high walls, nocturnal portraits on vanished corners. Two dry eyes search for the soul of this machine escape from the mouth of a bank. A numb bum pushes dead into the concrete carpet, which disconnects the worms from the birds. Lorries splash by as they chase their tails, hissing to a halt, with blasphemous beeping at drunken, angry, broken plunge malfunctioning at crossroads. Salty tears, seething chips, as X tells Y how Z is such a prick. A greasy tidal wave of abandoned paper searches the streets for trees to cling to. A dystopic scene in the dead of Saturday night unfolds. A cast of amateurs improvise their lives, satisfying the surveilling eye. No applause, no encore. The curtain drops and all appears calm for an hour or so, until the alarm clocks wake the birds. The city coughs and slurps once more, it spits another day. Lost boys and girls shuffle from their dreams.
Next, Judy. Next up, could we ask Joanne Collins to write?
Two short poems. First one I wrote when I was 15 and I like it. Between the woods and I, peace flows, which gives us time to share our thoughts and dreams and let us seep and drown into our fantasies, to let us travel through no time to live a life of dreamful experiences to flow with the tide. And I wrote the other one in Italian. It's a love poem. Written so the person couldn't understand it. And it works. Okay. Scrivo in italiano perché non capirai niente, perciò è molto importante il mio cuore, sono un bel tempo che mi piace. Grazie mille. Ho pensato c'era un suscito ma ancora mi cedo del sentimento, sono grata per la mia nuova poesia. And quickly in English, I write this in Italian because you won't understand it. Therefore, it's very important. My heart sounds a beautiful tempo that I really like. Thank you very much. I thought there was a drought, but now an overflow of emotion. I am grateful for my new poetry.
It's been all there. How Joanne feels. Thank you, Joanne. And next up, could we have Michal to write?
This is about a fellow that I've been working with for the last couple of years and I didn't really like him for a long time, but he's alright, don't worry, there is no getting around him. He is known as the man who says more by saying nothing. His eyes sunk and tired, probably the only medicine in his soul. His anger, similar in shape to that of Goliath from the myth, beaten only by the innocence of his grandson. The only thing that has kept his heart beating.
Next up, no stranger to a veil, Mr. Aaron Lewis.
So, a couple of quotations. When the people decide to live, destiny will obey and chains will be broken. That's by a Tunisian poet. Another quotation. We are not enemies, but friends. We must not be enemies. Though passions may have strained, we must not break our bonds of affection. The mystic chords of memory will swell when again touched, as surely they will be, by the better angels of our nature. By Abraham Lincoln. This is a poem that I wrote. Love, the deepest expression of our soul's song. The heart aligns itself with the deeper truth. We move ever deeper into the moments. As we give thanks for the lives we live, the universe cradles us in silken fabrics. We walk barefoot in the dark forests, the flow of dreams ever guiding us home. I lie here on a bed of rose petals, ever giving thanks for love's power. It will bring tears to men of strength, as we attune ourselves to love's cosmic vibration. Our souls become one. Thank you.
Thank you, Aaron, and our penultimate reader tonight, away from the States, Mr. Grant Burgess.
So I wrote this just less than a week ago, and I was it's really unlike a lot of things I write, because it's usually about love or being lost or having weird dreams or whatever. And this is actually about my little sister, which was weird. I'd seen a poet write about her brother. So I decided to write about my little sister, and I wasn't going to read it. And then I guess it was yesterday morning, my little sister and my mom were in a car accident. And they were okay, but they saw a car accident that came afterwards that where somebody died. And so I was really glad that she was okay. So I figured I have to read it, even though it's a bit rough. So it's called I Will Teach You to Tie Your Shoes Again. I burst into your room and said that God was a line and kept going each way, bigger and smaller, forever. After that day, I noticed you and kicked myself, for that was the first time. When you take up our sword and cut down your pride to dance for who or what you won't say. When you sound like me when you talk, then say strange things like, I think he'll come through for us this time. When you text me from 4,000 miles away to remind me not to get evicted or to ask if I tape the quarter to the living room fan. When you plan forever to keep your hands locked in your room because you do not know what they are for. When you do not believe me when I say they are for breaking the world into jigsaw pieces to put them back where you see a fit. Sister, they are for moving me aside and doing the work that I am afraid to do. They are for being still while the hands around are slamming together in applause to drown out the uncertainty of your heart. They are strong like mine, but wise, sister. They are lied to, told they cannot do what our mothers do. They cannot do what mine can do. No, sister, they will not. They ball up in fists when you ask them. They are your hands, and they open only for you. Like when you open them up and say, God is not a line, but a ray. It starts here, but goes on forever. Thanks.
Thank you, Grant. Our last contributor for the evening was raised among the lakes and valleys of Leitrim, but now I think Cork has, you know, managed to somehow claim him. With a short story, Mr. Conor McManus.
So you want pause? This is a story I wrote a few years ago. When did you have a fascination with concrete wagons? Or am I the only one? I mean, did you ever wonder what happens if the concrete goes hard in one of those things? No, okay, right. Well, there's a little hatch to the front of one of those drums, if you ever looked at it, and you have to get in there and hack it out if it goes hard. That's the story in there, right? This is called 306, and 306 is the name of the wagon. It wasn't an exceptional day. It was just one of those days that if you looked up, the patch of visible sky was off-white. One of those days that when you showered, you never seemed to dry. One of those days when the only place to be was inside, doors and windows hermetically sealed, and the air conditioning up full. It was a day like that that Mike Moran found himself in Midtown, 59th and Lex to be exact. An accident had jammed the place. Horns blared, cab driver screamed. It was humid and nothing had moved for nearly 2 hours. Manhattan was always hot, Mike Moran thought. 13 million people nuts to butts. Of course it's going to get hot. Mike was getting it in the neck from Pat Howie back in the depot. Fucking eye tie. But if Mike had listened to Howie instead of rolling up a spliff, he'd have headed downtown and dropped the load on Bleakers, and he'd be washing out back at base now. But he was rolling the spliff and thinking, how bad could it be anyway, and turned on to 55th and was now caught in the back of our legs and was heading uptown with a load that was worthless. It was 60 Newton stuff and had gone hard in the midtown traffic. So hey, he took a wrong turn. What's a guy to do? Can a guy not screw up once in a while? Can a guy not spliff up once in a while? Hell, it was only his first day after all. What does that guinea wop expect? Mike had two choices. One, he could wait it out and get back to the depot. It was quite relaxing when he turned off the radio and Howie, just sitting there, high up on his perch, high up above everyone else. But tomorrow he'd have the job of jackhammering the shit out. The worst freaking job on the planet. He contemplated this and lit up another one. Or he could just abandon ship, just bail. Just leave this big yellow mother sitting right here, right in the middle of legs. Take his lunch, his quaaludes, leave the empty bud cans, climb down, swing that big heavy door shut and be back in Mulligan sucking on a cold one in time to catch the whole thing in Channel 5. Then how he'd have a real fucking conniption. He'd like to hear him then, phony cocksucker. He'd have to get some of the other drivers, put them on overtime, come in, pick it up and put a night crew on, hacking the shit out. And that's just what Mike did. Left that big yellow mother blocking up Lexington and got the number 7 at 59th Street to Sunnyside and got off at 49th Street, crossed the boulevard and straight into Mulligan's. None of the guys were in yet and Jimmy Buckley from the County Cork was sitting on a bar stool outside the counter flicking channels. Mulligan's was cool and the buds were cool and the young wetbacks when they came in were cool, and by 7 o'clock Mike had convinced himself once again that the Morans were no quitters. How he owed him a day's pay and no wop was going to screw him around. Okay, so he could go back, hammer it out and get back in the saddle. Who knows, how he might even give him a bonus for all the free advertising he got him on Channel 5. He didn't stay long at the bar though. The wetbacks wanted to buy him beers. He wanted to keep the job. He'd go back and hack it out. Hard work never hurt Moran, right? And he had a secret weapon, and how hard could it be anyway? Maybe a little therapeutic even. He got Jimmy Buckley to put a pint of vodka on his tab and telling him he'd pay him Friday when he collected his check. He picked up a dozen oranges at Menzies on the corner. Back in his apartment, he injected the oranges with the vodka and placed them back in the red neck bag. That was his secret weapon. When he had the full pint injected into all 12, he crashed. Next morning, he was up and shaved by 6. It was a brand new day. He sat in Menzies with his dozen oranges and had a coffee and 2 cigarettes. He'd prove it to a Howie. No fucking eye tie was going to put one over an Irish. He was at the depot for 6:55. Howie was there and didn't know whether to punch him or hug him. Okay, so he's back. What a pair of cojones this guy's got. Come walking in here after abandoning 306 with 60 yen on in Midtown and gets me all over Channel 5. Can you believe this guy? Fucking Mick. Let him get this thing hammered out, and then I fired his dumb ass. A team had been hammering through the night before it got really hard, but there was still half of it to get out, and it just kept getting harder and harder. Mike donned the goggles and the earmuffs and the dust mask. He was buzzed. Howie had given him a second shot, and he wasn't going to blow it. He'd make a burst before the day got hot. Inside would be unbearable in the 90-degree heat. He'd get most of it done and come back in the cool evening and finish it off. Piece of cake, right or wrong. Oh, we shouldn't have a problem with that. Tomorrow will be like nothing ever happened, and Friday he'd be collecting his paycheck with the rest of the guys. But sure as shit, that concrete was already as hard as a broomstick. And after 5 minutes, Mike had his first orange, and he had one every 10 minutes after that. By 9, the dozen oranges were gone, and he was sweating like a sumo in a sheepskin, but was flying and thinking, who needs this shit anyway? At midday, Howie waddled over to 306. I gotta see where this guy's at. He hasn't stopped all morning. He didn't even take a coffee break. Maybe I was wrong about the guy. A little admiration for the Mick was beginning to well up inside Howie. Howie stuck his head through the hatch and was blinded by the dust. Hey, Irish, you in there? You in there, Irish? He shouted, but presumed Mike couldn't hear him. He waited. There was no change in the sound of the jackhammer. He pulled the airline and the hammer dived. He waited, expecting Mike to stick his head out to see what the problem was. He waited. No mic.
Fucking Mick.
He's probably had to go and asphyxiate in the cell or something. When the dust cleared, Howie could see the hammer lying on the base of the drum and the handle was tied up with the red net bag that held the oranges. Mike had bailed. If I see that Mick again, I'll whack the fuck. But by that time Mike was back in Mulligan sucking on a cold one and playing pool with a wet back, giving him advice about finding work. On Friday he rang Howie from Mulligan's for his paycheck. After all, he worked what he worked. What Howie said, I ain't going to repeat here. Thank you.